But when it comes to bonds, you have a lot more drivers of demand, especially in the short term. And so we have risk appetite as part of that as well, but also interest rates.
Which really fast forward to where we are today, bonds are kind of back to where they were almost a generation ago.
On this episode of Early Bird, bonds are having a great 2025. Why is that? And how should investors approach bonds in 2026? Joining us today on the podcast to discuss these topics are Charles Urquhart, founder of Fixed Income Resources, and Ben Lease, president and chief investment officer at Delphi Advisors. If you're an investor looking to stay on top of the latest market trends, then you're listening to the right podcast. This is Early Bird, and I'm your host, Stephen Lerner. Before we get to today's discussion, let me tell you how you can save time and beat the market through Early Bird, a free daily email newsletter featuring commentary about the latest trends in stocks, cryptocurrency, and equity crowdfunding. Early Bird is designed to help individual and non-professional investors stay on top of all of the critical investing trends. The newsletter is 100% free and is sent to your email box each weekday morning. Subscribe to Early Bird for free at www.earlybird.email. Once again, that's earlybird.email. And now, today's discussion. Hey everybody, welcome to the Early Bird podcast. Bonds are having their best year since 2020. The widely tracked Bloomberg U.S. Aggregate Bond Index has returned around 6.7% in 2025, which is pretty good. So why are bonds having a spectacular 2025? Well, what are the challenges with bonds, and how should investors approach bonds in 2026? We've done over 100 episodes of the Early Bird podcast, and we've never done a podcast on bonds before. So I've invited two experts on the issue to talk about bonds today. Ben, I'll start with you. I want to talk about why 2025 has been so special for bonds. I know you think part of the reason has to do with interest rates, but I'd love to hear from you. Why has this been a special year for bonds?
Well, thank you for the question, Stephen. And first and foremost, thank you so much for inviting me on the podcast here today. It's very much appreciative, and to get the chance to address your audience and do some education on the wild world of bonds and fixed income investments. Yes. I'm sure everybody's just super excited for it.
So why is 2025 special for bonds? Is it just interest rates, or is there more to it, Ben?
Now, bonds are an extraordinarily complex investment as opposed to equities, which are a lot simpler. We kind of have an innate understanding of basic supply and demand for equities driven by, you know, IPOs, secondary offerings, and sentiment a lot of times, right, for equities. But when it comes to bonds, you have a lot more drivers of demand, especially in the short term. And so we have risk appetite as part of that as well, but also interest rates, right? And as we all are aware, you know, interest rates on the short end of the yield curve, a yield curve is essentially a interest rates from short term in nature to long term in nature. So the federal funds rate is that short rate that's affected by the Federal Reserve, essentially. So they've lowered that. We've heard that in the news over and over again. So the short rates are lowering, which is a boon for bonds, essentially. But the long end is set by the market. So we have different ways that interest rates move on the short end versus the long end. In general, they've come down quite a lot across the entire spectrum of short and long. But in particular, kind of the middle of that yield curve, think, you know, 5, 10, 15-year interest rates, those have come down the most, and those also tend to be a fairly interest rate sensitive set of bonds. So when you combine a moderately high appetite for risk based on you know, what we're seeing in equity markets and fund inflows into corporate bonds in particular, we're seeing kind of those intermediate to longer term corporate bonds really get the largest tailwind from the interest rate environment and the kind of the continued bullishness on our economy in general. So the interest rates have definitely been a factor, but we also have that sentiment factor in there that's made 2025 a pretty solid year for bonds across the spectrum, but in particular, those bonds that sit sort of in the middle of that yield curve and require just a touch of bullish sentiment, a touch of risk appetite.
I see. So that's why. And goes back to interest rates, I think, a little bit, inversely related to interest rates as they have gone down this year. Charles, I want to bring you into this conversation. Let's talk a little bit about why this year has been special for bonds. Inflation is down. There are many factors that I'm sure you're going to talk about, but what is so special about 2025 for bonds?
Yeah, and Ben hit it right. The price reaction and the reaction in the market has been exactly right, and it has been bullish, and the right segments have performed really well. So a lot of the ags, you've seen really good returns. I think what's interesting is sort of what got us here is you got to remember that we kind of went through about 15 years of zero interest rates. And then, some pretty significant inflation, which really fast forward to where we are today, bonds are kind of back to where they were almost a generation ago. And when I say that, what I mean is that they're kind of in a Goldilocks moment. They're not kind of too warm and they're not too hot. They've had some price run that Ben talked about. But what I mean by the Goldilocks is that they're kind of situated in a place now where they're providing investors with what you call real yield. And I don't mean like really good. I mean real. I mean it's actually net of inflation. So bond yields right now, when you subtract the rate of inflation, you're still getting a positive return. So the value of your dollar is actually increasing over the time that you own that bond, which has been a rare circumstance over the past generation. And I've been in the bond market for quite a long period of time. So that's been set up. So now we have positive real yields, which has been a boon for bonds. Corporates have done really, really well. They've gotten to a point now where they're probably a little bit too rich. They're probably meaning they're probably there's probably not a whole lot of room to reach for additional yield because they've done well. We could talk about the semantics between corporates and governments a little bit more. But really, what the reason, the base baseline reason as to why the market has done so well is you've got inflation in check and you've got real yields that are positive, and it's actually, a flow of capital because of that.
So those are all good factors as to why bonds have been particularly strong this year. Bonds are a safe haven for investors. Many investors, as everyone knows, will gravitate towards bonds as a way to balance a portfolio, which may have more riskier assets such as equities or other alternatives. Bonds are also great for getting income at different times, investment income. But there are drawbacks. Charles, looking at the state of bonds right now, what are some drawbacks for investing in bonds right now? Are there any issues right now that investors should be aware of?
There are a couple of things that stick out to me, and I'll stick to really two of the bit larger asset classes that I know a lot of clients are involved in, and that would be treasuries and that would be corporate bonds. And even if they're not involved in corporate bonds, it's probably still worth listening just because they might have some exposure on the equity side too. And traditionally speaking, bonds will generally perform, will react to positive or negative news than their equity counterparts. So there might be some news in this that might make some sense to some stockholders too. What concerns me really is the fact that you've got the U.S., which is issuing more debt every year than it spends on Social Security and Medicare combined. The just the interest bill alone on the debt that it has to keep rolling over is the size of the Defense Department. Okay, they're rolling over almost $8 trillion in treasuries years. That's a really big number. Okay, so what used to be the risk-free asset out there for all investors in the world, which were US Treasuries, now investors are asking for a little bit of a risk premium because of the amount of debt that is currently on the US government balance sheet. So there's a little additional extra yield that's in the US Treasury, which is a concern from the standpoint of you may get treasury yields go up for no reason other than there's an interpretation that there might be and some additional risk involved in treasuries than there may have used to be. I'm not saying that treasuries are defaulting. What I'm saying is that the market is saying that you don't have your house in order, you're way over budget, you have an incredible deficit, and it's time to pay the fiddler. That's what's happening on the long end of the curve right now, and that's why the long end, the 10-year people have talked about, is staying somewhere in that 4% area, and why it's not lower. It's because of the fiscal constraints that we have on the long end. On the corporate side, what I'm concerned about is that a lot of these corporations that have corporate debt out there, the very large names, issued a lot of debt in this zero rate environment that I talked about over the last, several years. And over the next 3 years, there's going to be a huge refinancing wall in this current rate environment. Okay, so right now, corporate credits are a green light. I love corporate bonds. I'm not saying it's time to be concerned, but it's the one big significant thing that they don't control interest rates. And eventually, they're going to have to refinance that debt. So it's the one thing they can't control that you have to worry about. The stuff they can control, they can control. The stuff they can't control, like interest rates, it'd be time to pay the fiddler in the next couple of years. That's what I have my mind on. Other than that, I think corporate balance sheets are really, really healthy. I love corporate bonds here, somewhere in like the 5 to 10 year range.
Because some good points you bring up, certainly some warning signs to look for in the bond market. Ben, I want to ask you about some of the drawbacks in investing in bonds right now. As you know, some bonds have performed better than others. Is that the big drawback with some of the bond investing going on right now, or is there more to it?
Well, bonds as a category, right? We think about it as kind of this single big, fixed income, asset class. But the truth is that bonds come in all shapes and sizes, and no two sets of bonds are really created equally, right? They're different. They move different. They have different risk profiles. So when we think about, what are risks of investing in bonds, to Charles' point, right? Corporate looks really good right now, but people are continuing to kind of pile in that, with this idea that all corporates are going to be this counterbalance to maybe their equity portfolio, right? And the truth is that corporates, especially lower on the credit ratings, they move a lot like stocks do. When risk appetite increases, those bonds benefit from that, right? You get some yield compression, you get that the high yield to treasury spread really just tightens up. But then when we go into a correction or, God forbid, a recession in a bear market, those bonds fall too. So they don't give an investor the buoyancy that they think that they're getting from their bond portfolio. Owning bonds in and of itself does not truly counterbalance the short-term risk that we have from an equity portfolio. So when you want to truly balance that out, you have to be very selective on the bonds that you choose to complement your equity portfolio. And even though there is like a little bit more, I think premium happening, as Charles mentioned, in the treasury market, things like intermediate term and long-term treasuries, agency bonds, and very, very, very high quality corporate bonds are going to give you a little bit of that buoyancy. So I think
I
the
agree
risk
with
that I
you. I agree with you on the high. When you said very, 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 I like what you meant there, what you said there. I like that.
extra varies because it's true. Because if you're in the middle, right, you're still going to see those bonds fall when we go into a recession or a bear market. So very, very, very high credit quality is going to be very important to balance out your equity exposure. And I think people will start to fall into this lull that you know, bonds are going to get you decent returns. They're counterbalancing my equity side of the portfolio. And then when, you know, it hits the fan, it's not going to do what they think it's going to do, because just the owning bonds doesn't create that strategic diversification that people think it might. You know, to one of my favorite quotes is from Warren Buffett, right? You never know who's wearing trousers till the tide goes out. And bonds become sort of an illusion of safety if you're not doing it very, very particularly and strategically.
Good points. Good warning about what to look out for with that. So 2025 is coming to an end shortly. Let's talk a bit about 2026. And specifically, let's talk about how retail investors, normal, everyday investors should approach bonds in 2026. Ben, I'll start with you. How should investors approach bonds in 2026? And what role do you think interest rates will play in that in 2026?
So when evaluating a strategy to take on for the next 12 to 24 months, I would say, right, you need to look at kind of the state of the economy, state of corporate balance sheets, and what we think is going to happen in interest rates. I think with a pretty high degree of certainty, I can say short rates will probably come down a little bit, right, as they keep talking about lowering that Fed funds rate. And longer rates, to Charles' point, I think remains a little bit stagnant, if not lifts up a little bit. So from an interest rate sensitivity standpoint, kind of remaining in the middle of that yield curve gives you a good combination of interest rate exposure, higher coupons, but not taking too much risk. But that will, on the corporate side, depend on the health of the corporate balance sheets. If that continues to be strong, what we've seen in 2025, I expect going to continue into 2026. Mm. The two sort of bear cases for bonds, which I don't think are likely but possible and need to be thought about, are we have a return to inflation, right? Tariffs, for instance, might have a super delayed trigger on price increases, which isn't inflation in and of itself, but would probably trigger some interest rate fluctuation or going into a recession. So with either of those cases, if you have very interest rate sensitive or very low credit quality, those bonds could potentially be hurt. Yeah. So again, I think kind of sticking towards the middle of the yield curve, very solid credit ratings for corporate, or even mixing in some, you know, intermediate to long-term treasuries, kind of give you the best of both worlds from a portfolio management standpoint. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm not giving advice to those people who are building these intricate bond ladders and and doing all that, but from a portfolio management standpoint, I think that risk profile of that the meat of the yield curve with high credit quality makes sense.
Yeah. Great points. And Charles, what next year, 2026, how should the average everyday retail investors approach bonds? What should they know in 2026?
I agree with Ben completely. He's absolutely right. That's the right part of the curve to be in. I'll actually take it a step further. I'll get into the ladders and the barbells a little bit. I think that they're very easy to construct for your clients.
What in particular, dealing with average retail investors, let's just define ladders.
Not a barbell or a ladder or anything like that.
How would you define ladders and barbell structures?
Oh, okay, sure. Yeah, sure. So a ladder is going to be a series of maturities everywhere from that belly of the curve that Ben was talking about. So for instance, let's say that, you know, you're a conservative investor that's got a horizon of somewhere around 5 to 10 years. You know, this is a long-term strategy. You can also have one that's maybe 2 to 5. But let's just say, for instance, you're a 5 to 10 year investor in this case. Mm-hmm. You may have bonds that mature everywhere from 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, and 10 years. And the reason why you do that, Stephen, is that it immunizes you a little bit against all these different interest rates movements that Ben and I talked about that could happen that you can't control.
Yes.
So as bonds on the front end start to mature, you can either take that money in and reinvest it or do whatever you want with it. But it's a nice conservative way to have a bond portfolio that immunizes you against some interest rate risk.
And then barbell strategy, real quick for the audience.
Well, the reason why I talk about a barbell strategy is because right now, what a lot of assets like bonds or stocks are competing against are these really high money market rates, right? At like 4, 4.5, or whatever they are, Ben, something like that, 4%, something like that.
Hovering right around now. 4 on the high end right now.
Yeah, on the 4 end of money market rates. So since they're competing with that, it may not be necessarily something you need. You may not want to go out the curve, so to speak, mm-hmm. and extend those maturities. However, if the Fed does cut, which everyone expects them to do, that income on that short-term money market instrument that you own is going to go away very, very quickly. So what I would recommend is if you insist on holding on to that money market rate, is to have a barbell strategy, which is where you can still maintain some short, 1-2 year U.S. Treasury bill or CDs on the short end, or very, very short end corporates, and own some 7, 8, 10 year U.S. Treasuries on the very long end. This will give you some of that oomph that Ben was talking about before on the duration side, that if interest rates go down, the value of that long bond will go up. That'll give you a little appreciation. And on the short end, you can still continue to roll over that short-term interest rate of 4, 4.25% until the Fed cuts. And then eventually you're going to have to extend it out the curve.
Thank you again to Charles Urquhart and Ben Lease for sharing your insights on bonds. And thank you to everyone for listening to today's discussion. We'll be back next week for another episode of Early Bird. Have a great day.